There is real evil in the darkest shadows and in the most ordinary places. These are the true stories of the innocent and the unimaginable. Although Rebecca Lennox enjoys a fairy tale life, she harbors a dark secret that would rip it apart. She keeps it hidden until a barrage of terrifying visions launches her on a collision course with her past and an intense battle with her ultimate fear. Between the world we see and the things we fear, there are doors. When they are opened, nightmares become reality. Some believe there are restless, earthbound spirits who drift aimlessly, unaware that they are dead, all the while seeking comfort from the living. But when lost souls are ignored, they sometimes get angry and must break through the physical realm to make their presence known. Some of the participants of this program appear in shadow to protect their privacy.
She was an angel. Good night, Becky. I'll see you next week.
In the fall of 1974, 7-year-old Rebecca Mallory lives in the New Jersey suburbs. Like all parents, her father, New Jersey police officer Sergeant Bill Mallory, worries about keeping her safe and happy.
Forget this little guy.
Hi, Papa.
How was your day?
We played checkers and I won.
Oh, good for you.
As an only child, Rebecca is close with her family, including her Pop-Pop.
My great-grandfather, who I knew as Pop-Pop, was very friendly and I really liked having him around.
Buckle up, honey.
The motorcycle was laid out on the ground. And the driver was a good few feet away from the bike.
Stay in the car! Dispatch, I got a 901 at the intersection of Main and Mendham Road. Request assistance immediately. How did you know, Becky?
Pop-Pop told me.
Honey, Pop-Pop has been dead for 5 years.
He died when I was 6 months old. My Pop-Pop being in the back seat was actually normal. The accident happening in front of me was what upset me.
It was bizarre.
Keep your voice down.
Huh? The strange incident troubles Rebecca's father.
The kid sees things.
My mother insisted to my father, her exact words were pretty much, I'm telling you the kid sees it, I'm telling you the kid sees things.
Maybe she has a gift. Papa did, I mean, he knew when he was gonna die.
And the week before he died, Pop-Pop made arrangements for it. He died on a Saturday afternoon, just like he said he would.
Don't start that. You know I don't believe in that stuff.
It made me feel like a little liar.
Over the next year, Rebecca grows into a well-adjusted young girl, but continues to see spirits that others cannot see.
Hello. I'm Carl. What's your name?
Becky. I'm 7, but I'll be 8 soon.
Rebecca, stop it. There's nobody there. The steps are empty.
But Daddy, there was a man sitting on the steps.
It's hard to explain to somebody else that you can see a reality that they can't.
There was a man with a blue jacket and his name was
Rebecca's Carl. Father cannot come to terms with his daughter's odd behavior.
She is too old for imaginary friends. Pop Pop and all these friends are in your head.
But Daddy, I see them.
Then just block it out. Just block it out.
It was upsetting for a child to have your father yell at you for something that you can't help.
Light turns green.
There's no switch that I can turn off and on.
I promise, Daddy. I promise I'll stop.
My teenage years and early 20s, I just kept it completely to myself. If I saw something that nobody else saw, I would just look away and carry on as if I didn't see it.
Rebecca gets married in 1995, and years later, suffers through a bitter divorce.
What's up?
I'm scared. I want to sleep in Tim's bed.
Oh, and what does Tim want?
I want to sleep with you.
Okay, get in.
In 2002, Rebecca moves to southeastern Virginia with her two children, 7-year-old Tim and 5-year-old Hannah.
All right. Now, you guys settle down, okay? Or you're going back to your own beds.
It was easy for me to ignore everything while I was a single mom following my divorce because I was working 50 hours a week and raising two babies.
At this point in her life, she's become an expert at blocking out any unwanted visitors. Between a demanding work schedule and raising two children, Rebecca makes time for fundraising at a local children's hospital.
Thank you for coming. Your name?
Daniel Lennox.
In early 2003, Rebecca meets Daniel Lennox, a successful dentist in the area.
I can never get these things hooked.
Here, let me.
The two feel an immediate attraction.
Thank you.
Rebecca.
Thank you.
I was engaged to be married when I met Rebecca, and we really hit it off, and I ended up breaking off the engagement, and we started dating.
They marry right away, eager to start their lives together.
Oh. After Daniel and I got married, we moved to a new house. We started talking about maybe having a baby. Everything was great. Life was good.
Daniel is a devoted husband and a loving father to Tim and Hannah.
We pretty much became your typical ideal family.
Thank you. weeks later.
When I first saw him, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. You get that chill, and it's almost like you're too afraid to move. I didn't want to acknowledge that it was there.
Block it out.
Just block it out.
Block it out.
I couldn't choose not to see him. He was there regardless.
Rebecca is terrified. For some reason, she cannot block out this spirit. Rebecca worries that the recent sighting will open up a chapter in her life that she closed long ago.
His presence was almost like a threat to the peaceful, happy little life that I had established.
Hey, Mom, can I watch TV?
You know what? Dinner is almost ready, so go wash your hands, okay?
Hi, honey.
Hey, go wash your hands, okay? Dinner's almost ready.
I must have seen about 24 patients today. How was your day?
As always, she keeps her secret to herself.
Honey?
I'm sorry. What?
Is everything all right, Rebecca?
Yeah, you know, I'm really tired, that's all. That's all. Nothing. No big deal.
I didn't tell Daniel. I was afraid that would open a whole can of worms I didn't want him to know about.
As the days go by, Rebecca hides her fears and tries to keep things as routine as possible for her family.
Sorry, honey.
The day I saw the little boy's spirit in the hallway, I decided to accept it, but not share it with anybody else.
Daniel senses that something is bothering Rebecca.
I knew that if I pushed too hard, that she might just close up and not tell me anything. So I figured, you know, she'll tell me in her own time.
I was afraid that my husband would either not believe me and think that I was just crazy, or he would believe me, but would react in the same manner that my dad had 20 years ago.
Later that night,
going to bed?
Yeah, I have an early morning tomorrow. Don't stay up too late, okay?
I'm right behind you. Promise. Love you.
Love you too.
Somebody tugging at my blanket.
Tim?
I sat up, thinking it had to be my son, but there was nobody in the room.
Strange pressure on her lower leg.
It hurt the boy. He was giggling, not a sinister giggle, nothing evil, just like a little kid would giggle.
She discovers a tiny bite mark.
The bite mark looked like a small mouth, and you could even see where the top four teeth were all misaligned and crooked.
Faced with an unimaginable revelation.
Being actually physically bitten took it to a whole new level. My entire life, no matter what I saw or what I heard, no being had ever actually touched me. To know that they can touch you was terrifying.
Couldn't sleep without me, huh?
I was afraid of what my husband would think if I told him.
Rebecca?
What does this look like to you?
And he was in total shock.
Well, it didn't break the skin.
From the looks of the bite, there was nothing that could have done it to her except for a very small human mouth.
Did one of the kids bite you?
No, they're both asleep. I think it was something else.
Honey, this is a child's bite. I can see where one of the front teeth are crooked. Rebecca, what's going on?
And I told him, I think a ghost bit me.
I keep seeing the spirit of a little boy out by the tree line.
Rebecca still can't bring herself to reveal everything to Daniel.
I was too afraid and too confused and too scared to go into anything further than that at that time.
Daniel, but I swear it's true. I see him as clearly as I see you.
I didn't know what to think. I didn't know how to react. I had never been faced with anything like this before.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I was afraid you'd think I was crazy.
The presence of the bite mark is contrary to everything Daniel believes.
I didn't want to believe it was something paranormal, but faced with the evidence, I didn't know what else I was supposed to believe.
No, Daniel, what are you doing?
Daniel insists on getting professional help, but Rebecca is resistant because she doesn't want him to know any more than what she has already told him.
I didn't want this to happen again. That was the main thing. I wanted answers, and to that end, to protect my family, the only thing that I knew to do was to contact somebody that knew more about these things than I do.
Daniel searches the internet for hours, studying hauntings and looking for paranormal investigators in southeastern Virginia. He finds a group with solid credentials, the Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation, a nonprofit organization based near Richmond. Daniel contacts the group and sends them the digital pictures. A week later, an investigator from the Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation comes to the house.
Here are the photos I took of the bite mark.
Can I see the actual bite mark?
It's not there anymore.
I see. Mrs. Lennox, is this the first time you've experienced paranormal phenomenon? Yes, but it was no big deal.
Rebecca, he bit you.
Daniel is surprised when Rebecca downplays the incident.
He wasn't trying to hurt me.
I didn't want anybody else in it. The sooner I could forget about it, the better.
Entities like this are usually harmless. They'll go away.
The investigator tells them that the spirit will likely go away on its own.
Yeah, I'm sure that it will, but we appreciate you coming out.
I took her word that we were probably going to be okay. I started to feel a little bit more at ease.
You will. Okay. Thanks again. Uh-huh.
Rebecca is relieved when the investigator leaves.
As far as I was concerned, that was the ideal outcome. Just go away. My husband kind of let it go. It seemed to be like a small storm that I had ridden out. I thought it was over.
The house is quiet for 2 weeks.
Nothing else happened. We were fine. We started to get back into our routine again, and it was almost kind of forgotten.
Once again, Rebecca hopes to put the past behind her.
Started hearing the male voice, and it was almost as if he were in the kitchen. And this male voice seemed to grow closer to me, almost right behind my head.
She's visibly very shaken. And she kept asking me, "Don't you hear him? Don't you hear him? Can't you hear that?" And I said, "No, I don't hear anything." And I didn't.
I'm so sorry.
I could tell by the look on her face that she wished that I hadn't witnessed it. Maybe she thought I was going to leave her, and that never really crossed my mind.
Are you sure he said P-51 and Mustang?
Yeah, why?
I said a P-51 is a military aircraft. It's an aircraft from World War II, and they also flew in Korea. I said, "What's this all about?"
Daniel is confused. Rebecca knows nothing about World War II planes.
Mommy!
Mom, what's wrong?
Nothing, honey. Mommy and Daddy were just talking about something a little too loud. Okay, but hey, who wants some ice cream?
Relax, I'll get the ice cream.
Yay! I want sprinkle!
Okay.
Vanilla,
chocolate.
Yummy!
Not sure what to do, Daniel searches for any information he can find on P-51 aircraft and possible crashes in the area.
When Daniel was trying to come up with some kind of logical explanation as to what had happened, I was thinking, oh my God, he is going to completely demand that I go see a psychiatrist and they're going to medicate me and that's the end of that. This is over.
Does this picture mean anything to you?
No, nothing at all.
Rebecca's relieved that Daniel believes her, but she refuses to dwell on the incident.
She just wanted to kind of close the lid on it and not talk about it and not deal with it. I was upset and angry because I couldn't fix this problem and I couldn't help her.
One day while the kids are in school, Daniel takes Rebecca on a day trip to nearby Williamsburg, hoping to take her mind off of things at home.
So have you guys decided, or do you need a few more minutes? Honey.
Oh, I'll just have what you're having.
Rebecca is despondent and begins to wonder about her own sanity.
There are times, many times, where I have to sit back and ask myself if I belong in a padded cell on Thorazine or if it's all really real. Once you start doubting your own sanity, everybody around you will.
Both have the special place. Rebecca, I don't know what to say, except that I'm here for you.
I'm fine, Daniel. Okay, I'm fine.
People can only take so much. And if these unexplained things were happening to her constantly, it was going to take a toll on her.
Later, on the way home. Rebecca hears the voice of an old woman. Daniel hears nothing.
Where is my china? Where are my receipts? Where are my receipts? You can't do this to
Rebecca.
Me! I want my time.
Are you hearing something? Here in the car?
Just write it down, okay? Elizabeth Pratt Jones.
I'll
write this down too.
She said her property was taken from her and it was unfair and she was not to tolerate it. That the magistrate didn't listen, sold her slaves at auction, and she didn't see a penny of it.
I was completely and utterly stunned. And I thought to myself, she hasn't told me everything. And it was at that point that I realized that she was really the focal point of all this.
That night, Daniel doesn't push. He gives his wife some space. Stunned. The woman she heard in the car is now in her home.
What's wrong, babe?
They won't stop, Daniel. Even when I'm asleep, it won't stop.
Beth, listen to me. Either we move out of this house or we call the investigators. It's your choice.
Call the investigators. Tomorrow.
was a huge turning point for me. I was tired of keeping it to myself. So why not just go the distance and finally get it out there?
In the morning, Daniel calls back the Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation.
Your group analyzed our house.
He speaks with the new regional director, Tom Varanus.
I just took over as director.
Varanus is a scientist. He worked at NASA as an aeronautical researcher for 35 years.
My work with NASA gave me a good solid background in studying scientific research.
Linux.
What we are looking for is the possibility of proving paranormal activity does exist through instrumentation and through scientific research.
Varanus agrees to meet with the couple and run a few tests on the property.
Is Thursday convenient?
The sooner the better.
I'll be there around 7. Thanks.
Calls upon Melissa Kepley to help with the investigation.
My degree is in psychology. I am brought in to observe during the interview process to see if I see any red flags that may indicate some type of mental instability.
Tell me about the little boy, Rebecca.
I don't like thinking about him. He makes me feel sad. No, he was a child. He wanted attention.
I believe Rebecca and Daniel wanted some type of physical verification that what she was experiencing was in the environment, that it was not in her head.
Did he frighten you?
No. The only thing that really scared me was that I could see him, but nobody else could.
I was shocked that Rebecca was revealing as much as she was to the investigators. I wasn't so much shocked at the things that she had seen and heard. I was more shocked that she was willing to tell all of these things that we had just kept between ourselves for so long.
With your permission, we'd like to set up some equipment to take some EMF readings inside and out.
Yeah, go ahead.
Most of the EMF readings recorded around the property prove inconclusive. So Tom and Melissa try using a compass.
EMF readings can be done with a compass. A compass will pick up a magnetic field and will cause it to move. When we put the compass and an EMF meter near Rebecca, we saw the compass spin. And the EMF meter lit up. That is something we associate with an entity and not with a human being, especially with these particular meters. And that was a big surprise to us.
Didn't get any indication that the house is haunted, per se. However, we did get some high EMF readings in the hallway, especially near Rebecca. Rebecca, have you told us everything?
The house isn't haunted. I am. I've seen entities, spirits, whatever you want to call them, ever since I was a little girl.
I did tell him everything, from my great-grandfather as a young child in my room, to the accident, straight on up to the pilot.
Ever since we moved in here, I haven't been able to ignore these things like I used to, and when I couldn't ignore the little boy, and then I couldn't ignore the pilot, and then Elizabeth, I panicked.
I was finally able to say, there it all is. There's everything. And now I don't have to hide anymore. It was a huge relief.
Do you think I'm crazy?
We were convinced that we weren't dealing with someone who was mentally unstable and that we weren't dealing with a hoaxer. We were dealing with someone who legitimately had experienced something.
Why haven't you told me any of this before?
Sorry, Danny. I was just so afraid you'd think I was crazy.
Because of the lack of physical evidence, the investigators follow up with additional research at the College of William and Mary.
We had to take the information that they had shared with us and then investigate that on a historical side. Did these people actually exist that she claims she has talked to? If we could prove that they existed, now we had something that was quite interesting to everyone.
Feeling I've ever experienced in my life. It was fear and sadness all at the same time.
I felt it before I saw anything. This palpable danger. As it passed out the door, the feeling of dread went away.
Daniel fears that the shadow is an ominous manifestation of the pilot, and his presence is an omen that something terrible is about to happen. The Lennox family soon moves to a new home on the other side of town. For the next couple of weeks, things are peaceful. Rebecca and Daniel put the past behind them.
He didn't like to cook.
Hello? Oh, hi, Tom. Yeah, sure. Tonight will be fine. Okay, great. Thanks. Bye. They found something.
What?
He didn't.
The thing I wanted the most from the paranormal investigators was validation. I didn't necessarily want to get rid of the entities because I don't believe that they can be gotten rid of. In the same way that she didn't ask them to come around, I don't think she can ask them to leave either.
I think we
that night, Rebecca and Daniel meet with the CPRI team.
This article is from the Daily Press. It's dated March 16th, 1950.
Two pilots ferrying P-51 Mustangs crashed 600 yards from the couple's former home.
That's amazing.
Before revealing the rest of their findings, Baranis has some questions for Rebecca.
We wanted to make sure that we weren't being fooled. I think Rebecca was being very honest, but we have to make sure that the information she's giving us, there's some accuracy there. So we comprised a little test for her.
Rebecca, look at these names and these photographs.
He gives her a list of names without telling her which one is the pilot.
This is him, Harold Schultz. Only his friends called him Hank. And the other pilot was William Wellerman.
Rebecca easily picks out the names of the two pilots mentioned in the newspaper article.
It was a moment of just shocking revelation that, my gosh, she just had a list of 20 names. She picked two out, and she even gave more information than what they had given her.
Then Tom asks her to identify the pilot, Harold Schultz, from a lineup of photos.
Harold Schultz's photo isn't here.
You're right.
It was pretty exciting to actually see it firsthand and witness this. Was this a laboratory environment, you know, with sensors tied to somebody's brain? No, it was not. But we felt it was a good enough test for what we were trying to do at the time.
Without a name, the little boy is untraceable.
What about Elizabeth?
According to records at William and Mary, Elizabeth Pratt Jones lived on Henry Street during the 1700s. Her husband was a failed businessman, and the state confiscated the family's property to cover their debts.
It seems that Rebecca's supernatural gift attracted Elizabeth in Williamsburg, over 30 miles from Rebecca's home.
I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy.
It's a huge relief, but it's still really hard to overcome that fear of coming out of the closet, so to speak, with this.
Since the move, Rebecca has not seen or heard the little boy or the pilot. She believes that their spirits are somehow connected to the old house, and they were drawn to her because of her sixth sense. Over time, Rebecca learns to accept her gift.
Right now, I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on it. But I also know enough to know that I can't predict what tomorrow might bring as far as this sighting and hearing the entities goes. I could see one tomorrow. I could see one as I'm walking out to my car to take the kids to school. You never know.